Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, and a fabulous service department. Tom Brennan. You know who Tom Brennan is, right? The former Vermont coach.
Yes.
He just sent me a text. That's why I'm laughing. He just sent me a text. So, TB. There may not be a funnier guy on the planet than TB. Okay. But when it comes to inspections, routine maintenance, diagnostics, they handle it all beautifully. So much trust. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day. All these fans showed up at Cameron last night, and Virginia ruined the party.
Gets it into Clark. A shot for the lead! 0.7 to go, and a three-ball goes. Just the second make of the night for Virginia, and it goes off the head of Reese Beekman.
RD, two things. Reese Beekman made the game winner against Syracuse in the ACC tournament a year ago. And if you get a look at this shot, Reese Beekman should be at the free throw line shooting for a four-point play as you see Paolo Banchero come over on the Beekman jumper and hit the arm. That was a foul. Fortunate to be not to be called for Duke on that possession, but still, it may be enough to give Virginia a win here on the road.
And then they gave the ball to Paolo Banchero at the end, and he wasn't even close on the shot. Banchero just had one of those nights, he just didn't have a good night. I mean, it happens sometimes. By the way, Jesse Diggins ended up getting a bronze for the United States in the first ever women's individual cross-country sprint. There you go. So congratulations to Jesse. You notice I didn't say won the bronze? You don't win the bronze. You win the gold. Okay. You get the silver and you get the bronze. Last I checked, third place is... Hey, good news. The Steelers won third place in the division. How does that sound? No. But you get the bronze, and that's quite an accomplishment on a world stage. So I mentioned they had four silvers and a bronze. That's the bronze right there. I don't think the cross-country sprint, with all due respect, is going to have people flocking in droves to watch Olympic coverage tonight. I don't think that's going to do it. But it's still a great pickup. And Matt's already mad at the Olympics to begin with.
Correct.
Here's the one that strikes me where I'm like, just, it doesn't sit right. Eileen Gu of China, she won a gold in something. I don't know what. She's an American. She's from San Francisco. I believe her mother is Chinese.
Yes.
So that allows her to be there, and then her father's from the United States. It's called Big Air. She won a gold. And like, okay. That's nice. All right. Okay. We'll take a look at the end. Let's get at the stuff that actually people do want to talk about, even though I know the suit is sitting in the office saying, they want to talk about the Olympics. 50% now. Now it's down to 50%. I mean, the number keeps going up. the percentage that off. It's gone from 43 to 44 to 50% now off of South Korea. You know that? This is not going for the for NBC. This is not going well. So let's get to something people do want to talk about. Football. Lewis Riddick. He's a candidate, but you know what? That's only because Neil Coulong has turned down the Steelers GM job 7 or 8 times. Welcome, sir.
It's easier. It's better for my health. It's better for my family. You know, I can't do everything. I can only do one job at a time, and this is the one I have. I'm happy with that.
And we're thrilled that you choose us over them every time. Evidently, they're going to interview Lewis Riddick for the job. What's your thought on that? Because obviously they have already internal candidates, but what about this?
Here's the thing. I'm probably going to be the only media type that will say this. I don't know enough about Lewis Riddick to say one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's very popular in social media. I know that he's on Monday Night Football. I think he does a pretty good job. I can't say I know intimately and uniquely what it takes to be the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because of that, I don't know about Lewis Riddick any more than I know about anybody else, short of the internal candidates, which is, you know, you're aware of them from their work internally. I don't know whether Lewis Riddick can do the job or not.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think anybody else is really going to cop to that either, to be honest with you. It's right. Not a role that comes readily made. Not to mention, I can't think of another word for this, the complication, the presence of an 18-year, highly successful head coach,
mm-hmm.
That changes your typical scope of what the general manager would be overseeing. They're not bringing in Kevin Colbert and his 20-plus years of experience right. as a general manager with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin came in the middle of Kevin Colbert's tenure, and eventually it kind of rose to a point where they were probably more or less on equal footing. I don't know whether Tomlin reported to Colbert or Rooney. I don't think they would release that information outside, but what I know is whoever the next general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers is, Mike Tomlin's not going to be reporting to that person.
Right.
So with that, it changes the scope of what we would think a general manager would do.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, it's not just this, but they're overseeing the administrative staff, they're overseeing the scouting staff, mm-hmm. the personnel staff, which is football. I would think Tomlin would kind of be seen as he's going to take the football stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You run the scouting stuff. We are collaboratively going to come up with what our philosophy is for this team, and they're going to scout. You're going to take care of the organization of all that. He's going to worry about the pro scouting stuff and what's on the field, and this will all blend together. I would think, just from an organizational structure perspective, that's what they would want to do. Dollars come into that as well. General managers have a real wide range of salaries. It really depends on what they're being asked to do, what their job description is. Knowing the Steelers, because this is sort of the way that they do things, maybe not so much with Colbert, but he was the youngest GM in the league, but he certainly wasn't the oldest either when he came mm-hmm. in. So right. you kind of think that they have their eyes on expansion within the role. Let's start them off. Let's show them the Steeler way. Let's build them up, and we'll come together with that. I would think with that, it kind of suggests probably, you know, maybe a little bit younger than older, but they're not going to come in the top dog of the organization. With that means they're not going to pay him, you know, market rate for that position. It's probably going to come in a little bit under, and maybe that might influence somebody's decision one way or another. I would say this, in all fairness, and with all due respect to Lewis Riddick, he's in no position to ask for top dollar as a general manager, so maybe there's something to that. You know, I can see cost being something of an issue, especially when Tomlin is already being paid substantially, and he probably has better insight and should have better insight into the football piece of it than the new general manager will. So I'm talking a long way around calling it, you know, kind of bargain shopping, but if anything, I think Riddick might represent that. Perhaps more than anything else, but I don't think To be blunt, I would be very, very surprised if Lewis Riddick got the job. It doesn't mean that there is not a role for him anywhere. I don't think he would be the best candidate that they could find.
But they also have an internal candidate they're taking a long look at.
Two of them, and they should, because between Brandon Hunt and Omar Khan, these are two guys who have come up through the organization. They started off at certain levels and have earned promotions. They have decision-making ability and authority within the organization. And they're used to them. They understand the structure. They know what Colbert does better than anybody does. So, to me, there's a natural, path of continuity here, which not only makes a ton of sense from a business perspective, it also happens to be modus operandi for the Steelers. They love internal candidates. We're seeing that more and more. So I think it still makes the most sense that either Hunt or Khan would be the primary people that they're looking at, but it does make a lot of sense for them to cast a wide net and try to field as many candidate interviews as they can, just to see what's out there and who knows, build a connection with somebody that you really liked, but the job wasn't right for him at this time. Something comes up down the line that fits a lot better. You're bringing that person in off the speed of the interview for one of these jobs they probably aren't the best person for right now.
All right, so now let's get to the Super Bowl itself. It's going to be Sunday. So right away, what's a factor or two that stands out to you in this game that could be swing factors?
I think, and it's not exactly empirical. I picked the Rams to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. I really thought the marriage of Sean McVay and Matthew Stafford would have produced perhaps better offensive results than we've seen to this point. Certainly it's working out well for Cooper Kupp. Stafford hasn't played well in a couple games.
No, he has not.
Not the last game. I just mean throughout the season,
right.
He got a couple clunkers in there. Pretty bad performances. I just feel like we've talked about this in this segment for many Super Bowls. That hot defensive team that comes in, that generally gets overlooked because they're playing a big name, big production offense, defense tends to kind of have the day, and the reason I'm really kind of sitting on this, again, it's not empirical at all. Everyone wants to overlook Cincinnati's defense for the sake of the hallowed Joe Burrow.
They don't have stars. Okay.
Yeah, there's no star power to them.
All the defensive stars in this game, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd, Von Miller, they're all on the Rams, and yet the Cincinnati Bengals might have a better defense.
They absolutely have a better defense. If you've watched the last two games, or at least six of the last eight quarters, you're playing the Chiefs, they're gonna get you here and there.
Yeah.
But look at the second half of that game. Look at the way they completely dismantled the Titans. And I'm not saying the Titans belong any further ahead this season than they finished, but it's bad. I mean, the level of defense that Cincinnati put onto their opponents is pretty remarkable. Now, I'm not saying that they're the 2015 Broncos or anything like that, but
of course not.
They're a dominant defensive team. They've showed that. What is it about the Rams that makes us think they're going to go out and drop 31 points in this game? I don't see it. And I picked the Rams to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
I think the Bengals shut them down. And to be honest with you, I think the Bengals are going to win the game. As much as I don't really want to say that, I think that they will. I don't trust enough of what I've seen of Matthew Stafford. He's had bad series in each game of the playoffs to this point. He didn't come up fully at times. He let opponents back into games. Penchant for turnovers. They don't run the ball. They're fairly one-dimensional. I think Cincinnati can reduce them to where they don't want to be. And if that's the case, I see enough playmaking ability out of Cincinnati's offense to say they can win this like 22-19, one of those kinds of games. Something late happens. They get the break, frankly, the way that they have in three playoff games so far this year. They're that scrappy team that I think is just going to finish the job. And they shouldn't. None of it makes sense. I can't even say I would make them the favorite in the AFC North next year. But I think they have everything they need right now, and this is the right opponent for them to play at the right time. We're going to praise Joe Burrow until our throats are sore the way that we do. But the reality is the Bengals' defense has carried this team, and I think they're going to do it again.
The one area, if I'm Cincinnati, that worries me is I feel the weakest unit they have is their offensive line. I know they've run the ball well. Last I checked, Miller, Floyd, Gaines, nobody talks about Greg Gaines, and Donald play on the other team's defensive line. that is a little bit of a concern.
and one of those guys is Aaron Donald.
Yep.
Keep that in mind.
Aaron Donald,
a high-level guy. He's an elite, uber-level guy.
Aaron Donald is a great football player. Right. The only problem I've got with this game is the game's on NBC, and they are going to show us repeatedly him in the game. And I'm just like, somebody's got to tell them. You've got to get a clue as to what's going on. Show us the game.
Other guys there.
Other guys are there, and it was an early season game, and I can't remember where the Rams are playing. And Aaron Donald finally got a sack at the end of the game. They must have shown 20 to 25 replays of him being blocked all night. Look what he's doing here. Look what he's doing. What? He's not close to the guy. Okay, what they do. It's like so what?
Look at the fact they put a tackle, a tight end, and a kickout guard on Donald.
Right.
That's how they stop him. They dedicate a third of their offense to him.
There were times he was singled. There were times he was singled. He didn't get there. He just didn't have a good night. I'm sitting there like going, do I have to keep watch? I wanted to watch the game, not him. All right, and it was a game where he didn't play well. To be honest with you, Neil, he didn't play well. He got one of those, meaningless sacks at the end of the game that meant like zero to the outcome. All right, and it was like, hey, he finally got one. I'm gonna go. He finally got one because he just had a bad night, and they were singling him most of the time. And I was like, come on, guys, show the game. Okay, I know what you're trying to do here, and I know you own PFF, and he's your PFF darling. I got it. But come on.
To the point that I was going to make, Donald cannot have a
he's a great player. I've watched a lot of football. I know a great player when I see it. He's a great player, but it's overkill.
That's the NFL, and that's football in general. As much as we don't have enough time on this segment to get into Pro Football Focus and the impact that they've made over the last 15 years on the game. But the reality is, as much as we want it to be an individual sport, it's really not. And I don't think any part of the game stands out to prove that more than your defensive line. Now, largely because of Pro Football Focus, we've broken defensive linemen, defensive ends, outside linebackers, edge rushers. There are a multitude of specialty types of positions within that front grouping now. And it does make sense. But if you look at a pass rusher, we'll take T.J. Watt because he just broke it. He was unsuccessful on, 92% of his pass rushes. Unsuccessful as if we define it as getting a sack, which I know Pro Football Focus isn't going to. But the end result of a sack, he fails 92% of the time. And no one has ever sacked a quarterback more than T.J. Watt has.
Right.
So it's not about – defensive players make impacts on a few plays, only a couple plays, and they can just be dogs for the rest of the game.
I can give you – Donald, it's one out of every seven. So that's 14%. That means 86% of the time he's not really involved in what's going on. Okay?
Yep.
And I'm just telling you, that doesn't mean he's not great. Okay?
Yeah,
but that's the reality of it.
It does mean
that
he's great.
Right.
In comparison to his peers, that is great.
His peers aren't 14%. His peers are
really good ones.
Right.
Seven.
Right. Yeah, a lot of really good ones are 7 or 8 or 9%. So, I mean, 14. But, again, that's a reality right there. 6 out of 7, right, doesn't figure in the play.
Yeah, I think a great example of that, if we're going to tie this to the Steelers, as sad as it is that Steelers are nowhere close to this game and probably won't be for a little while, but the last one they played in, one of the best performances that I saw in a Super Bowl that was not from a guy carrying the ball, throwing the ball, sacking the quarterback, was Keith Miller.
Oh, yeah.
Heath Miller laid tire track
yes, he did.
On Clay Matthews
all
most of that game.
Day.
He destroyed him. absolutely destroyed him until Ben switched Miller off to the other side and pulled the guard to go to their backside running play that Matthews saw coming, made a play on the ball, caused the fumble, Packers go on to win. I am absolutely certain, as I sit here today, if Miller stays right by Matthews, Matthews is once again deleted from the play.
Yep.
Rashard Mendenhall probably runs for another 6-7 yards plus, like he did that entire drive.
Yep.
The Steelers score, and they win that game. And Rashard Mendenhall is the MVP. And instead of talking about Clay Matthews today, what we're talking about is how Heath Miller got robbed of the MVP of that game because of how dominant he was off the edge, blocking that guy who's supposed to make more than one play in a game. Instead, Clay Matthews is immortalized forever because he came up with the biggest play of the game.
Yep.
And hats off to him. I mean, he made a great play. And Heath Miller is an excellent player. Right. He always was. I'm sure Matthews would say the same thing. It's just more the defensive player has 2-3 opportunities to make big-time plays in a game. The best ones are the ones that do that.
I'll give you one for you. Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor, when the Giants won the Super Bowl over the Broncos, made the single biggest defensive play of the game. On a goal line, on a goal line stand, he got Elway, right?
I remember that. I remember that play.
Lawrence, I mean, it was the single biggest defensive play of the game, right? Other than that, Taylor had, for the most part, a pretty nondescript day, except he had the signature defensive play of the day. So there you go.
And amazingly, again, it comes from that edge player.
Yep.
You know, they get paid to make those couple game-shifting plays. And this is kind of a Belichickian philosophy in that football is won in situations. For the most part, at the pro level, there are, say, 65 plays in a game.
Yep.
His theory is that I'm using simple numbers here.
Sure.
55 of them are going to be more or less draws between the two teams.
Sure.
Pro players, everyone's getting paid. Coaches are getting paid. They're probably going to fight back and forth. But the difference in the game comes down to those specialty situations, 10, 11, 12 snaps a game. If you win those, you will win the majority of the games that you play. And edge rushers, I feel, and to some extent, interior defensive linemen, dictate that for the defense more than any other spot does. Because they're the guys that are going to get to the guy with the ball first before they have an opportunity to make a play down the field.
Right.
Really, if you get an interception 30 yards field on a pass play, it means that your pass rush didn't land. So it starts up front. To me, that's going to be the way that the game is played forevermore.
Well, and one final point of that, and I've made this point a lot. Football is such a team game that if one guy is in the wrong spot or doesn't know what he's doing, it can wreck the entire play. One guy. That's why when they practice it and one guy can't get it right, they can't use the play. And it's amazing. That's how synchronized you have to be in football. All right. Thank you so much. And thanks for turning the Steelers down again on the GM thing, because it really does bail out the station, myself, and this segment every week.
You know, they're persistent. I tell you, next year we'll see if it's the same thing. But you know, you're coming with me if I ever take that job. So we got to discuss terms and everything.
Okay. We'll at least, how about a contingency plan in case?
Sounds good.
All right.
Do that. We can work with that.
All right. Neil, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Neil, cool on. Yeah, I know we took it all the way to the bottom. But the conversation was good. It was interesting. Kept Matt from complaining. And the suit wanted to come in and talk about the Olympics, so my contingency was to take Neil as long as I could. Because if the suit comes on and talks about the Olympics, we're going to get a 50% drop like TV does. Just a thought from this station and the Ad Council. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Any complaints before we move on? I just want to make sure you're okay.
Not since the beginning of the show, no.
Nothing's changed since the beginning of the show?
Nope. All complaints remain the same.
Yeah, and I thought I'd calm down all your complaints. All right. Which is, sounds like three quarters of my job now. All right.
Yeah, I don't think that was in the brochure when you first signed on here 10 years ago.
I'm looking through my contract here. I'm like, I don't see it. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. Let's see. It's currently, 5:40 in the morning in Beijing, so... No medals. All right. It's just even the suit's becoming a bit discouraged.
Oh my almighty!
See, he thinks you win bronze. I'm like, nah, that's not how it works. Third place is third place. It's like you get one, which is better than the person to finish fourth. All right. You finish third place in the Big Ten. You know what that means?
You didn't win the championship.
It means that you get the 12 seed. All right, so...
that too.
All right, let's get to Tom Hannafin. Let's talk some Super Bowl, sir. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be back. I like that we can check in like this every once in a while when something magnanimous in sports is happening. It just makes me feel good, you know?
It's all about making you feel good, brother. All right. I woke up today and said, how can we make Tom feel good? Let's have him on the show. That'll make him feel
You're
good.
You're a nice guy. You're a nice guy, Steve.
Don't tell anybody. So this matchup this week, we're finally going to start getting into it because we haven't talked at all about it. Because, you know, that's why I was like, there's 2 weeks of hype. There's not 2 weeks of hype for this thing anymore. It's everybody kind of settles in about Tuesday and starts talking about it. So let's get to the Rams. The Rams are an all-star team. They have to be an all-star team to attract fans. And I give Kroenke and those guys credit. They understand the market. The market is that we can't go out there with an average team. We got to go out with, like, star power. But they're not great. So what do you think of the Rams? I know they're in the Super Bowl, but what do you think of them to this point?
You know, I was thinking about that as the playoffs were going on, Steve, is that there is no one great team this year. We all kind of knew it was going to be a dogfight. You know, my Philadelphia Eagles played the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the first round, and listen, things going a little bit differently. The Buccaneers could have found themselves in the Super Bowl. I think, obviously, that finish to the Rams game was very different than what a lot of people expected from a Tom Brady team. So I thought this was kind of anybody's year, and it's proven that with, like, I think you can look at that Chiefs-Bills game. Maybe those were the two best teams that actually played football this season, but you just knew they weren't going to wind up in the Super Bowl. So the Rams, I think it all comes down to how is their front seven on defense going to play. And yeah, it is a really old, boring adage about football is that you win the game in the trenches. But I think that's 100% true for this Super Bowl, because I agree with you. I think there's weapons for Los Angeles on the offensive side of the ball, wide receiver. Question with Tyler Higbee, obviously. The running back position is nothing remarkable. The offensive line is solid, but it's not the most dominant in football. And then I don't necessarily think Matthew Stafford, other than the experience of being an NFL quarterback for over a decade, has all that much on Joe Burrow, because they're both going into uncharted territory. So there's a lot of question marks, I think, about both teams, but I think that's the beauty of this year's playoffs and this year's Super Bowl, is that it's been unpredictable. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
This is the difference between Burrow and Matthew Stafford. And I'm going to take about similar points in their career. Stafford was a first overall pick and worked hard his entire time. Burrow was a first overall pick and automatically gave his team, a bad team, a puncher's chance in every game. That's a big difference between the two. Matthew Stafford didn't give the Detroit Lions a puncher's chance in every game he played. Burrow did with Cincinnati last year.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you entirely. I think Joe Burrow has already, it's the difference between college and the NFL, I understand. But the guy lived in the SEC and won a national title and did all this stuff in a very short amount of time and overcame a major knee injury from last season to get to the point that he's at. He's a very calm, cool, collected guy. So it's why I genuinely don't believe either guy necessarily has a big advantage. I think, yes, Matthew Stafford, of course, he's played for eons in the NFL, and he has that professional experience, sure.
Yep.
Burrow is still largely a rookie when you think about it, but he's a really good rookie at the same time. So I just don't think Burrow gets fazed by these types of circumstances. We saw that in the national title win for LSU years ago. So I think that's going to play into his favor. But again, it's the Super Bowl, and I don't think Matt Stafford's necessarily going to walk into it with no butterflies. This is the biggest opportunity of his career. We saw how much it meant to him and his family for him to win the NFC Championship game. That was a really special moment. So, I mean, so much of this comes down to emotion and not necessarily X's and O's. And if you can be cold and calm like Burrow has been, that could be the edge. I just don't know if it's enough for Cincinnati to win. That's the question.
Well, here's the issue that I look at. Cincinnati's offensive line, if you look at all the units on the field, might be the weakest unit in the field, especially in pass protection, against a Rams defensive line that has Leonard Floyd, obviously Aaron Donald, and the guy that, and again, this is where Donald comes into play. You've got to single up Von Miller now. And Von Miller, to me, has been a difference maker for them in the playoffs. If Cincinnati can make that a stalemate, they got a real shot.
And that's way easier said than done. We saw the nightmare that they somehow outlived against Tennessee, nine sacks given up. It almost reminds me, Steve, of this past national title game that we saw, in that the way Alabama was playing that Georgia front seven in the first half. It was about getting the ball out quickly from Bryce Young. Mm-hmm. Not a ton with the running game. If you're going to use a guy, you know, in this case it's Joe Mixon for Cincinnati, you've got to utilize him in the passing game. You've got to get him to the edge. You've got to get outside the numbers. And that's something Cincinnati does very, very well with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. So
no doubt.
If you can do that and you can make that front seven run all over creation and wear them out a little bit, you got a shot. But I do worry about that stuff. And you mentioned how the Rams are an all-star team. Well, they kind of treated this like an NBA franchise, and that Von Miller really didn't start ramping up until the playoffs. He was just kind of gets his trade from Denver, is biding his time, healing up a little bit, and they've just clicked at the right time. And I don't think enough of that gets diagnosed in the NFL, because it is very much so that there's 17 games and you've got to play as hard as you possibly can every single time. And it's like, no, it's okay for you to sit a guy and think about the postseason. That's what the Rams are doing.
And by the way, there's an underrated guy in that defensive front, Greg Gaines.
Oh my God.
And you know, it gets now look, Chris Collinsworth is doing the game, so it's going to be a 3.5 hour Aaron Donald commercial, even when he's not making plays. And it's like, Chris, okay, one out of every seven plays he's involved in. That's 14%.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just telling you that's a fact. One out of every seven. Just go through the numbers. One out of every seven, he's involved in the play somewhere. That's 14%. Right.
I'm curious to see if Collinsworth is a bit of a homer. You know, his Bengals being in the Super Bowl, it's a big deal, but I'm with you. He does love Aaron Donald.
Oh, because he owns PFF. And PFF has him rated number one. So, you know, and look, Aaron Donald is really good. I talked about Aaron Donald when he was a Pitt on this show. So, okay. I know he's really good. I don't need to see 3.5 hours of him getting blocked by somebody.
I know. Yeah, listen, I think Aaron Donald deserves all the praise in the world.
Yeah.
But that is the matchup, and you hit it on the head, is that if this Rams defensive line, the front seven, can overwhelm Cincinnati's offensive line, all the pressure goes on Joe Burrow to make something out of nothing. And Cincinnati got very fortunate in the game against Kansas City. That defensive line for Kansas City has really not been what it was in the last handful of seasons. It's pretty much Jones against the world. So it's like, all right, you know, who else is going to come after you? It's it's going to lie on, I think, if the Cincinnati defense can pull up with something big, because I was impressed what they did against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah,
Patrick Mahomes
too.
Went from a 90 QBR in the first half to one in the second half.
Yeah.
Now, is that entirely on Cincinnati? No, but he made a lot of mistakes. Obviously, he was pressing quite a bit there in the second half, but you got to give credit. This Bengals defense is better than people give them credit for. I just don't know if they're going to necessarily overwhelm or slow up like Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., and all the weapons that Los Angeles has.
Kupp is really good. I mean, I give him a lot of credit. You want to talk about, you know, Beckham is going to take some limelight, no question. Ramsey's going to suck all the oxygen out of the room. I'm taking Ja'Marr Chase. I'm like going, yeah, I thought you did a great job of that touchdown pass in the playoff game.
Yep.
It's like, I always
really nailed that.
Yeah, here's my running joke on Jalen Ramsey. He's the best. He's the best. He's the best. He's 17 interceptions behind Jack Ham in his career. In an era where they didn't throw as much.
Oh, God. You know, I'd love to hear Jack and you call this game. That'd be great. And Jack would be like, this guy's not that good. You know,
he's really, all right. He's really good, but he's not the best I've ever seen in my life.
Like how many of these defensive backs have never dropped an interception in their life and have never given up a touchdown? It's the mentality you have to have.
I know. You have to have a short memory. Now, you're playing out there. You got to be able to, no matter whether you're Jalen Ramsey, Nick Scott, whomever you may be, you got to go to the next play all the time. And that's because, especially the way they throw the ball today. So let's get back to Cooper Kupp. I brought him up. Mm-hmm. You watch him, Tom. What makes him maybe a cut above some other people?
I think he's this fantastic combination of speed and athleticism, but also just really good route running. I'm thinking Ed McCaffrey route running. You knew exactly where he was going to be. He knew exactly what the coverage was going to be, and Elway was going to put it on him. Now, very different athletes. Ed McCaffrey was not the type of burner that Kupp is capable of being, and Cooper Kupp is not Tyreek Hill, so I understand the spectrum on that stuff.
That's true.
But Cooper Kupp is a smart wide receiver.
Right.
He will find the gaps, and clearly he and Stafford have an outstanding rapport. And we talk about Matt Stafford not necessarily elevating the Detroit Lions. Well, I would argue he certainly elevated Cooper Kupp to levels where he's exceeding numbers put up by, his former teammate, Calvin Johnson, which is astonishing and very, very different physical build. So I think Cooper Kupp is going to obviously get his touches, and it's kind of if you're Cincinnati, you understand, he's going to get his numbers, and it's just a matter of limiting that and not forgetting at the same time about Odell Beckham on the backside going deep on you. So there's just a lot of different ways that Kupp is able to get open and move the sticks for them, because I just don't think the running game is going to be dominant for Los Angeles.
Out of Eastern Washington.
Astonishing, right?
Yeah.
Astonishing.
Played on the red field. which now gets to Ja'Marr Chase. Last spring, the NFL draft comes up, and a lot of people had ticketed, remember, and you remember this time, obviously, that Penny Sewell was the guy that's going to be. He's going to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And they picked Chase. And I came on the show the next day, and I said, what a great pick. They've got the quarterback. Today's game is about getting it downfield. I said, you got to give the Bengals credit. I said, they went against conventional wisdom. And I said, I thought they made a great choice. Well, he's been something else. What makes him special besides the connection with Burrow?
The connection, I think, really helps, but he's just so dynamic as a wide receiver. He's fast. He's got sure hands. He runs good routes, but he's also deceptive in a lot of things that he does. You know, so much of football is not necessarily flat-out speed. I mentioned Tyreek Hill. He might be the fastest guy on the field, but you've got to just understand it's like, hey, I take my foot off the gas here for a second. I sit in this zone, and all of a sudden I'm open. So I think he's wise beyond his years in terms of IQ of the game. Having the season off, I think people forget about that, is that, yes, he played for that national title team for LSU and Burrow. He then opted out, and he spent a year
getting ready for the National Football League. And listen, I'll be one of the first people to say I came out early this season when he was talking about, oh, it's hard catching the football because it's a bigger ball and it doesn't have stripes on it. And it was like, what? Like, you spent a year right. getting ready for this.
Right.
And he had his growing pains in the preseason and the first handful of games of the regular season, but he has absolutely turned it on. And I think having that year to sit there, to learn, to train, it really, really helped him. And it goes back to how often do you and I, Steve, talk about, well, they drafted this guy first overall, so he's got to start the next week. And it's like, no, there is still a benefit to players in any type of sport, sitting, observing, and learning. And I think Ja'Marr Chase has benefited from that.
Yeah. It's interesting. The top offensive rookie and the top defensive rookie, Micah Parsons at Dallas, both did not play in 2020.
And we're condemned for doing that. You know, obviously we understood the pandemic, but...
You know what? I never did. Now, maybe it's because I know Micah. That's, you know, that probably enters into it. But I said that they would set the tone for future drafts, that if they struggled their rookie year, people would be a little hesitant about going after somebody if they opted out. But if they succeeded... then it would open the door for more people to consider that route. Unfortunately for college football, you know, and fortunately for the two of them, because they're such exceptional athletes, it played out that way.
Yeah, I think they are, you know, not like once-in-a-generation talent. I think Parsons is, I don't know, that remains to be seen with Ja'Marr Chase. He is outstanding, but is he once-in-a-generation? Yeah. We'll find out.
Parsons I can speak to. Chase I can't, obviously.
Yeah. Parsons is clearly what he's done so quickly. And the thing that we take for granted, I was speaking to Thomas Frank Carr from Blue White Illustrated earlier today, and he was like, Parsons, when he was at Penn State, was still learning how to play linebacker.
Yes.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
And then he goes to the NFL, and now I understand Penn State fans are like, well, where was this? And I was like, he was still learning.
You know,
was freaky good at Penn State.
You know, but they did have, he was a part of the preseason, and they had done those walkthroughs, and they had done, and they had just got into the first four practices of preseason. And I watched what they wanted to do with him, and what they wanted to do with him here for 2020 was what he's doing with Dallas now. So they already had it in their mind here that they wanted to use him that way, right? Just, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, and that part, and they had to change up because of it. So that's the part that Penn State fans never saw, but that is exactly how Penn State wanted to use him, the way the Cowboys used him when it got to 2020. So that's a part. Yeah, that's a part I've never talked about, but that's a fact.
It's been fantastic, and I'm just happy for, you know, him and his family that he's able to take advantage of this opportunity. And he did the right thing. He looked after his health and he looked after his future. So I'm never one to condemn kids making these decisions. So I'm all for it.
Well, I hope this was you said it might be uplifting for you. I hope it met expectations.
Well, the last time we talked, you were sad because you were looking out your window and you saw ice.
Yes.
And I can't imagine it's any different there. It's very similar here in New Hope, Pennsylvania. But this always makes my day, and now I have my mind right heading into the big game. The big game.
Yeah, known to some people as Super Bowl 56. All right, so.
Oh! Thanks.
Sorry.
You're a rogue.
Yeah, I'm a rogue. I'm real. All right, Tom, thanks so much. Look forward to talking soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Steve. Enjoy the game.
Good to talk to positive, uplifting people.
Oh, my almighty!
Instead of the, you know, the WMC crowd. You're asking yourself right now in the studio, what does WMC mean?
Correct.
Whine, moan, and complain. All right.
Got it.
You're entertaining. You got just enough of a streak of hate in you. Not dislike, but hate. That takes the show to a different level. Don't you think?
Glad I can provide an extra
sort
of entertainment.
You got just enough Philly toot in you.
I have been told that once before.
All right, back tomorrow. Great to have you with us on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.